When it comes to fishing pros and media people, everyone loves to talk about their success. But it's the failures that we learn more from, and we're going to talk about the things that have cost me the most fish and fishing time on this episode of Fishful Thinker, the podcast. I'm Chad LaChance, and you're listening to Fishful Thinker, the podcast. All things fishful, all the time. Hey guys, Chad LaChance here. Thanks so much for tuning in, as always, to this episode of Fishful Thinker, the podcast. Of course, brought to you by the fine folks at Sportsman's Warehouse. Visit them at sportsmans.com or any one of 140 plus stores nationwide. It is Friday, May 3rd, and they have a three-day weekend sale going on that probably worth your looking at sportsmans.com. So check that out and tell them we sent you there. I would appreciate it very much. Early May, it's a fantastic time to be on the water. It's a fantastic time to be outside. As we did last year, I started the Catch a Fish a Day for the month of May. And basically what that means is no matter where I am or what I'm doing, I'm going to try to take enough time out of my day to catch one fish. Doesn't have to be a fancy fish or a big fish or anything like that. Just figure out how to catch one fish every day for the whole month of May. And the reason I do that is just as a discipline thing and a motivating thing to get outside and take a couple minutes out of your day. I think most people would be better off if they did. If you can find a minute or two in your travels, maybe you drive by a river or you drive by a pond somewhere in town. That's exactly what we'll do over the month. I've got several trips scheduled, and they aren't all going to be able to fish right in my home area. I'll be on the road some and be having to find some fish. And last year, I salvaged a couple of days by fishing in a little pond right next to a hotel we were staying in and stuff like that. So I encourage you to maybe try that, join along. I'm going to hashtag it Fish a Day May, and we'd love to see some of your guys' posts. We won't post all the fish we caught, but I'll definitely post a few of them and or anything of any say, kind or significance, let's just say. So far, it's only May 3rd. I haven't gone fishing yet today, but the first 2 days took me a grand total of one cast each day. But to be fair, I'm fishing on my home lake, and I know a few spots around this lake. I caught a real nice smallmouth the first time on a hit stick jerk bait, and then caught a trout on a smaller hit stick the next day, just a little stalker trout. But again, it's not about the fish. It's just about making yourself get out there and catch one. So I'll be heading out here shortly, as soon as we get this posted. So hopefully you're getting out as well, because it's the time of year to do so. So enough rambling about all that stuff. Get outside, please do. But let's talk about mistakes. And people don't like to talk about their mistakes. But here's the thing. You'll learn more from your mistakes. And I look at them. I mean, my company's named Fishful Thinker. I'm very analytical about everything that I do. And my mistakes are really where I learn the most. It didn't matter if I was back in prior days in real estate or finance or when I was racing motorcycles or anything else I've done my whole life. It's the mistakes I learned the most from. And I think fishing as well. But in an effort to maybe keep you from making some of those mistakes, I figured I'd share mine. And some of them are very easy to deal with. Some of them are a little less preventable, but still they were mistakes that I recognized before I made them or that I recognize now not to make. So we're going to share those here over the next little bit. And again, hopefully you'll check that or learn something to help you out from it. So first mistake, and this is one that took me a long time to learn. It took a whole bunch of mistakes by me and other people in my boat and around me before I finally gave up on that issue, and that is the use of clips in fishing. When I mean clips, I mean the clip you tie on the end of your line, and then you clip it onto your lure so you don't have to change knots. And there's several mistakes have revolved around those, and I don't use them at all anymore at this point. If I need a clip of any sort, or if I felt like I need, I will use a loop knot, because here's what I've seen happen a lot of times with clips. And I know a lot of people like to use them. I find lures on the bank here. I've probably found 300 lures over the years on the bank around my house, and like 25% of them have a clip on them, even lures that have no business having any sort of a clip or snap swivel on them. And I'm of the opinion in general that the more junk you put in your system between you and your lure, or you and your bait, the less fish you're going to catch. And I don't care if you're fly fishing or spin fishing or bait fishing, whatever you're doing, the more stuff between you and your lure, the more it's going to slow you down. And clips and swivels include that. And I get it. Everyone wants to change lures in a hurry without changing knots. But a couple things happen when you start using clips. One, clips themselves fail commonly. And yes, you can buy high-end clips. Berkeley makes some really good crosslocks. Other companies do, that you can use that will most likely not fail for you, okay? But they're big, and they're going to mess up a little bit of lure action, and they're going to definitely change the profile and other things of the lure. But most of the lures that I find with clips on them, or the people I see, are just plain little cheap clips. And what happens is the clip themselves fail. And I've had that happen several times on Fishful Thinker Television while we're filming. Dan Swanson, love you, Dan, one of my closest friends. He had one on because it gave the lure better action. We even talked about it. And I was skeptical, and I get it. It made the bait he was throwing had no split ring on the front, and he wanted to swing around more freely, okay? Makes sense. A clip will help you with that. Just for the record, so will a loop knot, which can just be retied. He finally hooked a big pike. We were at 11 mile. We were filming at 11 mile reservoir here in Colorado. He hooked a big pike, like a 40 incher. Sure enough, at the boat, the pike goes crazy, the clip fails, and the pike and the lure get away. So now you have a pike that's got a big old jerkbait in his face and swimming around with it, and you've got no fish for TV, and you got an angler sitting there that's fairly grumpy at that point because his equipment failed. I see that commonly. That's just one example. So my first thing is the clips from the standpoint of the clip themselves failing. The second thing that happens when you use those clips is your knots get stale. And fresh knots is one of the other things I'm going to talk about in this podcast, and we'll transition right to it. Fresh knots. You have to have fresh knots, particularly with fluorocarbon or monofilament line. And the lighter that line is in pound test, the more important it is. But always fresh knots. And it doesn't matter. I've talked about this on a whole bunch of podcasts, but I see it all the time, and I'm occasionally guilty of it as well. You fish along, and you just get lazy, and you don't retie. Well, the line gets hot. It gets brittle. The knot takes the bulk of the beating. It may hit the guide tips when you reel the thing up. It may be banging on the bottom when your lure's hitting the bottom. It may just flat be brittle from where it heated up when you cinched it. Whatever the reason, knots get stale. And when they get stale, they fail. And retying early and often is a way to prevent that very easily. And using a clip to prevent you from having to retie is really not a good choice from that standpoint. So the only time I won't retie on a regular basis is a straight braid to something connection, maybe a Texas rig with straight braid on it or something like that. Braid that's palomared off to whatever it is will definitely hold up for a long time. I won't retie that as often. But conversely, if I'm fishing something like 6 pound fluoro, even just for little fish, I'll retie that thing like every 15 minutes, whether it catches any fish or not. I'll retie it after every fish or every other fish, and definitely after every snag. So the lighter the line, the more you need fresh knots. So the second mistake, besides using the clip, is, let's say you're not using a clip, is just not retying early and often. And I'll give you one example of even with heavy line. We were fishing at Elkhead Reservoir, and I was fishing for smallmouth. And we were filming, and I see a big debris mat that floated in the back of a little pocket. And anytime you get a debris mat, a bunch of flotsam that floated in there because of the wind, it creates airspace underneath it where fish can sit. And you can pitch through that, and you can catch fish. So we see this big mat. I know there's some largemouth in this lake. So I'm like, well, if there's a largemouth anywhere, it's going to be under here. I just don't have the right rod on the deck of the boat. So I go in the rod locker, the ranger, pull a rod out. All right, perfect. I got my old pitching rod, right? And it's got 17 pound fluorocarbon on it. And I'm like, yeah, that'll work. That's fine. And I look at it, and the knot didn't look bad. But I know the last time I had used that rod, we had caught a bunch of fish with it. Well, that means that knot had been through some trouble potentially last time I tied it. And then it had been in the rod locker of the boat for like 2 weeks without being used at all. So the knot's just sitting in there getting stale. Sure enough, I pick it up, first pitch. Very first pitch, camera guy gets set up. I got the boat all set up. We're ready to go. I pitch into this mat. Sure enough, I pitched right on the edge of it. You could see the fish come out and grab the bait and broke the knot. I set the hook, broke the knot immediately. We're talking 17-pound fluorocarbon. I didn't set the hook that hard. The drag wasn't extra tight. It was not a mistake other than I did not retie that bait. If I'd have taken 15 seconds and retied that bait before I pitched it in there, we would have had an epic clip. And instead, I had an epic fail. So retie your knots. That is a big thing that will make a difference. Another thing that can make a difference for you, this mistake I've seen a bunch, is straightening hooks. And I've made this mistake myself a lot of times. You get pretty jaded about that. And I fish a lot of times with jig heads that can be straightened so that you can snag and you can pull it back and the hook will bend open. But if you only do that once or twice, you're fine. By the time that hook's been bent several times, it's noticeably weak. And I've had the hooks break commonly, and it's always after they've been straightened and bent back, straightened out, bent back. So bending your hooks more than just a little bit will make a giant difference in how strong that material still is, and they will break very easily. So straightening hooks, if you've straightened a hook a time or two, pull it off there. Treble hooks are a classic example of that on baits. They get bent when you try to take them out of fish. You straighten them back. Next thing, they're broke. In fact, I found a lure on the bank yesterday, and it's got three treble hooks on it, and two of those three treble hooks were missing various hooks off of them where they had broken off, and whoever was fishing it was still fishing that bait with those broken off hooks. And so it tells me that those hooks had been abused, and that's how they break like that. They weren't rusted yet. It wasn't that old of a bait, but they just failed. So straightening hooks very much can be a really bad mistake that we've made a lot of times as well. And you have to be careful with that because you can lose a lot of fish that way. Another way to lose a lot of fish that I see very commonly, and I do that myself, this is one I'm religious about because I learned it early on in life as an angler, is drag settings. The drag settings on your reel, very, very important that your drags be set correctly. And this is another one we go over a lot because I get questions on it. And when I fish with people as a guide, first thing I will always check every rod all day long, and I don't let clients adjust them because invariably drags are too light or too hard. And too light means you don't get a good hook set. And too hard means you have no safety net, so that if you do set the hook too hard or the fish surges, particularly at close range, you're going to break fish off. And I've said this before, even recently, that your drag should be no tighter than it takes to get the hook set. So a drag with braided line can actually be lighter than a drag with, say, nylon monofilament line, because the line doesn't stretch. You get a little bit of a snap when you set the hook every time because there's no stretch to the braided line, and therefore it will bury hooks very, very easily. Whereas monofilament, maybe not so much. So setting the drag needs to be done by pulling the line out the tip guide with the rod at an angle that you would expect for fish. In other words, if you just grab it in front of the reel and pull off a foot of line and go, yeah, that feels right, unless you've done a lot of angling, and have a really good feel for that particular line, drag, surface, and rod combo, that is a very inaccurate way to check. The right way to check is to pull the line all the way through all the guides and out the tip, and then pull it from there, because every one of those guides creates a pressure point on that line, or a bend in the line right there, a little bit of a turn in the line, adds more resistance than if you just had the drag itself. So say there's 12 guides on the rod total, or 10 guides on the rod, each one of those adds more resistance, as does the line in the water. So if it feels tight to you at the reel, it's way too tight, and once you pull it out the end of the rod. Conversely, if you can easily pull it at the reel, it's probably pretty close at the tip of the rod, and if you can pull it too easily at the tip of the rod, you need to tighten it. So again, put a bow in the rod, put a bend in the rod, and check it that way, at least until you get a very good feel for what's going on. I said this again recently, if you always have time to tighten the drag so much as the hook is set, as long as the hook is buried in the fish, you almost never have time to loosen the drag. And particularly on things like hook sets, where you're setting the hook maybe expecting an average fish and it's a much larger than average fish, or the fish is going the other way when you set the hook and it adds a little bit extra pressure. Again, you don't have time to loosen it. You almost always have time to tighten it. And if it's not tight enough, you can always palm the spool like you would on a fly reel, or on a spinning reel, same thing, just cup the spool, or on a casting reel, just clamp your thumb on it. But either way, you can always add more drag with your hand very quickly without having to change anything mechanically. So not having drag set correctly, and more often than not, I would say they're too tight. Most of the time I see people with drags too tight, and then they wonder how you broke stuff off. So keep that one in mind, that's a good one as well. Another one is stale line, particularly when it comes to nylon monofilament. Nylon monofilament absorbs UV, it absorbs water. The process of absorbing and drying and absorbing and drying weakens it, UV weakens it, it dries out, becomes brittle. And I see this one because typically it's pound test, it's very heavy. And I just had this one the other day from a neighbor kid who I've mentored for a long time. His buddy was over, and he hooked a fish. It must have been huge. Why? Well, because he broke my 10-pound test. So in an effort to teach this teenager a lesson, I'm like, well, may I see your rod, please? And I look at the rod, and the spool's about half full. I get it. He may not understand the full spool and all that 100%, but the line was literally chalky white looking. Well, I guarantee you, by the time nylon monofilament has that chalky white look to it, it might have been 10 pound when he put it on there, but it was more like 6 pound or less. And so I showed him that by grabbing it and just breaking it, just pull on it and break it. And if I can break your 10 pound test by just grabbing two ends of it and breaking it, it's brittle. So I helped him out. I spooled his reel up with some fresh line for him and get him going and explain to him that fresh knots and fresh lines catch fish. Braided line, maybe not so much. Fluorocarbon, you need to check it. But nylon monofilament, I don't care what your Uncle Bob taught you, it definitely loses strength in a hurry over time. Fortunately, it's less expensive, and therefore it's cheaper to replace. And if you're really worried about the cost, which I totally understand, then just top your reels each time. And by that I mean put 100 yards of line on the reel. Even if it'll hold 300, leave the other 200 that were on there from something else, tie it off with a double uni knot, and leave it right there. And then when you're just topping off with 100 yards, so that 330-yard filler spool of Trilene XT will last a long time if you're only using 100 at a time. So, and since the other half of it doesn't get used underneath there anyway, just top your reels. And just for the record, I have access to probably all the line I could possibly use the rest of my life. Still, most of my reels are topped off with line as opposed to full spools of fresh line all the time. There's just no point in that. So, and the other thing I figured out with casting reels is I prefer to have braided line underneath, old braid of some sort, even if it's heavy braid, underneath, as opposed to particularly fluorocarbon or nylon, but especially fluorocarbon, because fluorocarbon is very dense and very heavy. I mean, if you pick up and weigh a spool of fluorocarbon, it's heavy, and that doesn't, I mean, it's not heavy to your hand, but it's heavy in terms of the rotational energy of something as finely tuned as a bait caster. So if I put half the weight of line on that bait caster, it spins freer, and the brakes do a better job of controlling it. So I will typically put on something like my flipping rods and that are going to have fluorocarbon on top, I'll literally fill the spool 3/4 of the way full with braid and then put 50 yards of fluoro on it, if that, because I'm pitching and flipping heavy cover. It's a close range thing. If it's my crankbait rod, well, maybe I'll fill the spool halfway with braid and then get after them from there with the fluoro on top that I'm going to crankbait with. But again, it has to do with the rotational energy of the weight of the line. And for the case of backing, I'll use old braid coming off of other reels and just wind it on backwards, braid that's all faded and fuzzy, and just wind it on backwards, because here again, it's not really going to see daylight. You're not going to fish with it. So do that commonly. And that'll help you out, save you some money, and let you still have fresh line so you're not breaking fish off. So another one kind of along a similar line to that as far as wasting line, but more importantly, costing yourself fishing time, which in my opinion is also a way to not have successful days. Bait casters. A lot of guys throw a lot of bait casters, and I fished with some of the top pros in the country, literally guys that won Angler of the Year for Bassmaster, some very high-end guys I fished with, and invariably they will backlash at some point during the day, and they will spend however much time dealing with that, or they'll bean a dock piling, or they'll hit their, you know, their navigation light on a back cast without realizing it may have nothing to do with their inability to control the reel. It's something out of their control or something that they missed. You know, they go to roll cast underneath a dock and hit the dock instead. Well, now they've got a big old backlash, and you spend all this time taking it out. And then you run the risk also of kinking your line and ruining your line. And if it's braided line, you may never get it out anyway because it can be hard to unbacklash. So what I do, and I've gotten a lot of people around me to do, and it makes it brainless, is I tape all of my bait casters. So however far I can throw. So let's say we're talking about my pitching and flipping rods. Well, I'm never at any point going to have more than about 30 feet of line out, no matter what. So I will pull out 30 or 40 feet of line off the end of the rod, and then I will lay electrical tape right on the spool of on the bait caster and then wind the line in on top of it. That electrical tape will make almost a full revolution around the spool. And that will make it basically impossible for you to backlash that reel any deeper than that. So now I can pitch recklessly around docks. If I get in a sword fight with somebody else on the boat, you know, where two of us tangle on that, or I hit a light, or I just flat blow it and throw one into the wind and blow it and just don't have good control, you can't possibly backlash it. So something like a crankbait rod, well, I'll pull out a long cast length and add another, say, 20 or 30 feet to the end of that and tape it down right there. In the event of most of my bait casters, as I've already mentioned, they're topped off with other line. Typically, I will put that junction of those two lines right underneath that tape. And therefore, I know when I get down getting close to that tape, it's time to re-spool that reel anyway. And so that makes it virtually impossible for me to tangle enough line to matter. So I can be filming a TV show, camera guys on the clock, other people are on the clock. I don't have 5 minutes to be digging backlashes out. And again, I don't care who you are. Eventually, you will backlash it for maybe not even for your own reason. And this makes it very easy. And I've fished with a couple of pros who backlash 4 or 5 times a day. And if you spend 2 minutes each time, well, that's 10 minutes of fishing time you lost over the course of a day. Not to mention, you may have tangled your lineup. So that's one that is a big one. I think it will make a huge difference for people if you take care of that as well. And then along the same lines of the line is constantly feeling when you retie, particularly if you're fishing around cover, feel the line for the first, say, from the lure itself up to maybe 15 feet above it. That's the line that's going to contact your cover, maybe hit your rocks, just generally take on abrasion that you may not notice otherwise. Or also, if your line gets stepped on the ground, that's a big one if you're a bank angler. If your line is sitting on the ground, particularly here again with nylon or fluorocarbon, if you step on it in the gravel and the rocks, all bets are off. That line is now significantly weakened because it's going to be pinched on something abrasive. It may be nowhere near the lure, and that is bad juju. So do that. If you're careful with line being on the bank and things like that, don't step on your line. And that's a big one. And I see people do it all the time when they've got line on the bank or they lay the rod down, and that's just not good all the way around. So take care of your fishing line. Keep it from losing fish. The last one I want to throw out here, and this one's way more vague, but it counts nonetheless because it's bit us, I can't even tell you how many times, and that is leaving fish to find fish. If you're catching fish and with whatever kind of consistency, the only chance I'm leaving that scenario is if those fish are 100% the wrong kind of fish. In other words, I'm in a tournament, they're not big enough, and I'm sure of it because I've caught a bunch of them. or they're the wrong species for what I'm trying to catch, so I need to find a new spot. But at the end of the day, if you've got fish that are biting, I'm going to recommend that you stay there and you beat them up till they quit biting. And then I'm going to switch lures to see if I can get them to keep biting again with some other presentation before I go looking for new ones. Because literally 7 out of 10 times, leaving fish that you know how to catch to go find other fish somewhere else on the lake or else on the river, wherever you're doing, will bite me. When in 20 years of filming, it's bit me more often than not by a significant margin. It always seems to be one of those deals where, dang it, we need two more fish. We can't find them. I go back to where they were originally, and we'll catch them. So I might rest fish for a little bit. In other words, pull off the spot and let them reset. I might completely change from, let's say I'm catching them on a topwater bait to something that's just under the surface, or let's say I'm catching them on an erratic bait. Maybe I'll try something more rhythmic, but I'll change things up, maybe even just change color or casting angle on the spot where I go back through the same area, but the cast is 90 degrees opposite to what the other one was. Whatever it is, I try to mix up and keep those fish biting for as long as I can, because when I leave, it invariably starts the wheels coming off, and you get somewhere else, and either those fish don't bite any better than the ones you were at, so it was a waste of time to move, or somebody else is sitting there, or they're not there at all, and it was a total waste. And those things happen more often than I just leave fish that I can catch to go find other fish. So unless you know for sure they're not the right fish, keep catching them, because if you leave them to find other ones, you might regret it. I do more often than not. So that's the last one. And then I'll throw this out, and this is just a generally good practice thing. If your vibe is that you need to change lures or you need to change something and your gut's telling you that, don't fish for 10 more minutes. Just make the change, because confidence catches fish. If you're second guessing your own presentation, just make the change, because just fishing, going through the motions without confidence, you're not really in the ballpark. And I actually learned that one from Kevin Van Dam, a conversation with Kevin Van Dam, considered the best bass angler of all time. If you're thinking about your next cast instead of the cast you're on, you're not doing it right. And that's a minimum example of the same thing. If you're thinking about a different lure instead of the lure you're fishing, or a different area instead of where you're fishing, just go do it. Because the longer you wait to make that change, the more you're second guessing what's going on, and the less fish you're going to catch. So those are mistakes that I've made and that I commonly see other people's make. Hopefully they'll help you. If you can avoid them from learning them from me, that would be great. I would love to hear about that. Chat at fishfulthinker.com if you guys ever have questions. Or even just to say, hey, we love this or we hate that about your content. Tell me. We would love to be able to make content that you guys want. And so don't be shy about emailing me and saying, hey, that's dumb. What are you doing that for? Or, hey, this is we'd really like to see more of this. So we'll be glad to do it. And we just want you guys to keep listening and watching all of our stuff. Speaking of that, at Fishful Thinker on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. We are on those on a daily basis. And then also Altitude Sports and Entertainment Network and World Fishing Network. At this point, we'll be airing 3 days a week on Altitude Sports and 5 days a week on World Fishing Network. So hopefully you'll tune in and check those out. And of course, the YouTube channel at Fishful Thinker. Please like and subscribe while you're there. It's a labor of love, and we're trying to get after it and make that thing a good channel. There's 650 videos up there. Almost all of them are education-based, so hopefully you'll check that out and subscribe while you're there. So, thanks for listening. I always appreciate it. This has been Fishful Thinker, the podcast.